Oh, to answer your question, what is the difference between a person's gift and their purpose? I would say that they go hand in hand because I think the gift that God's placed in you, some people spend their entire life trying to figure out what their gift is. And for me, my gift of encouragement was something I had to look back and see, what was I really good at? Where did I really excel at? And for me, it was always encouraging people and helping people come out of dark places. And so I think that ties into what my purpose is, because why would God give me a gift that I can't use? And I think a lot of us have to spend that time and be alone, which I think is scary for some people, because isolation is really where you grow.
I searched all over the world, struggling to find it. Then I met my boy, David E. Simons. Yeah, I searched all over the world, struggling to find it. Then I met my boy, David E. Simons. Yeah, discover my gift. Yeah, yeah, discover my gift. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to another episode of How I Discovered My Gift with yours truly. It's David D. Simons. I'm excited. My excited is excited and delighted to have my brother on the show. I can't wait for y'all to hear this episode. I know this was going to be an episode where you're going to listen to it again. You're going to also need to really listen, listen, listen. I know my brother speaks with great wisdom, and there's going to be some things that are going to be freeing, especially, I have a feeling, especially for my men that are going to hear this today. But let's go ahead and get into it. Terry Terrell is a licensed master social worker that provides therapy for preteens, 10 plus, teens, adults, and seniors dealing with depression, anger, anxiety, trauma, and relationship conflicts. Terry has more than a decade of experience working with families and children. He has vital knowledge, experience, and skills in the preservation of families, family-centered treatment, and reintegration of children back into homes. Upon graduating with his master's from Wichita State University, Terry worked in the Permanency Clinic as a trauma-informed reintegration therapist. Terry's goal is to honor and empower his clients through guidance and support so that they will walk away empowered to navigate the complexity of life with the right tools to build their future. Welcome to the show, my brother.
Man, all that sounds real good.
You, man, that's you. That's you. You did that. So take us through the journey, Terry. Like, where did it start for you? I want to go back to childhood, man. From childhood to adulthood, how did this journey start?
Man, that's way back. I think if we're talking about childhood, I think bits and pieces. I think when we think about our childhood, and you start thinking about where you end up now, you always think about, what are the areas where I start to see glimpses of who I am now? What are those areas where, you know, I got affirmed or I got some praise or I did something really well and people were starting to notice, hey, you're pretty good at poetry or you're pretty good at speaking or you're pretty good at this. And those areas really kind of stood out to us. So for me, I mean, it's just interesting because my mom's side of the family, we have a lot of preachers and pastors. And then on my dad's side, it's a little bit rougher group over there. And I've been raised around both. So, and I have both experiences within me. And so I've had to overcome a lot. And so where I look at where I'm now, if somebody would have told me where I'm at right now, back then, I wouldn't have believed them. But I think, you know, my faith has been a big part of who I am today, just being faithful and being understanding that God had a plan for me, even when I tried to, you know, negate that. There were some things that were in place that helped me kind of come back to where he wanted me to be and create the impact that he wanted me to create, not just with people, but with families. So as a kid, I'm not gonna go way, way back, but I think for me, when I was younger, I had some behavioral stuff when I was elementary, some of the in the in those classes. And what they did is they put me in some of these learning disability classes. And you see that a lot with, you know, with youth, with minority youth is, you know, they lack the resources to understand some of us, or instead they think that we are incapable of intellectual, of being intelligent and being able to articulate ourselves. And so they put me in one of those classes, and it just kind of carried over until I kind of had a understanding of that I was in these type of classes. I ran into a young lady, and it was kind of like a bully teasing type of thing, like, oh, you're in those special classes type of deal. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she pointed some things out to me, and I was like, well, it's not like I'm not capable. And, you know, I was doing really well in these classes, and I wonder why they were so easy. But once I found out that, you know, they really didn't think I was very intelligent. They just thought that I had these behavior things and that I just wasn't very smart. And so, that was a big part of me finding out who I was and challenging those narratives that were placed on me. And then, you know, fighting to kind of get out of those spaces. And in the process of that, you know, my mom helped me kind of get out, because let me back up a little bit. So when I found out I was in those type of classes, you know, it didn't bother me a whole lot, but I went and talked to my counselor like, hey, what do I need to do to get into, you know, a regular class and learn some different type of curriculum, some stuff that had challenged me. And his response to me was, I don't think you're ready. Why don't you work on getting your grades up, and then we can have a conversation about it, you know? So in my reply, I went back, got straight A's. And then so I come back to him, have another conversation. And it was kind of the same thing. Like, you know what? I just don't think that you're ready to be in that space yet. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, give it a little bit more time is what his response was. So I went back, maintained straight A's, honor roll, all that, and then came back to have a different conversation. And you know, this is where I kind of got an understanding that it wasn't just, and I'm not going to say it was malicious, but he had this thought, this narrative about me that wasn't true, and that I was not capable of operating in certain spaces. And so I ended up getting my mom involved, and she was very supportive. And she ended up getting me out of that. And so when I got into a regular class, not only did I become top of the class, but I superseded and got very good grades, was in top of the class. And so just that was really interesting part of my life, because for me, it was the first time I understood that people will put you in boxes and put you in spaces that they feel like you belong. And if you're not capable of being aware of you being in those spaces, then you won't challenge yourself. You won't push yourself. And right. Sometimes those systems are there to keep you locked in. So I know I said a large mouthful, but that was just one of the areas of my childhood where I understood that I had some greatness involved in my life. God had placed some really awesome things in me. And then so as I continue to climb and do awesome things as I got older, I had to look back and say, how many other Terry Terrells are put in these type of situations that just needed somebody to believe in them, or somebody to encourage them, somebody to challenge them to be better than what they were doing and what everybody else expected from them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So tell me, like, when you think about it and you look back over the journey, and even into being a therapist today, what do you say your most dominant gift is?
I would say my gift to encourage. My gift to encourage and to kind of see a human side of people despite whatever they're going through, whatever they've been through, and kind of the systems that they operate in, and see them as a individual that can be empowered to change whatever situation they're in and put themselves where they want to be.
I love that. And so as you were going through your childhood, would you say that, like, do you see the glimpses of that encouragement gift, you know, whether through situations or through experiences, where did you say, what would you say you first noticed it?
first note is, give me some clarity on what you're asking me.
That gift to encourage.
The gift to encourage. I think it was kind of always there. I think it was, you know, I think when I was younger, it was more of my ability to be able to communicate and make people laugh and or whatever it was. So I don't think it was necessarily encouragement at that time. I think it was influence at that time. And then I think as I pulled myself out of a position of inferiority and poverty mindset, I think I was able to see that if I could do this, certainly other people can do it. Mm-hmm. When I stepped into a place of empowerment and I was able to pull myself out, and I said, you know what? It's just in me. Mm-hmm. It's harder to find.
So what shifted you to pull you out? Like, what happened? Take us through that, like, that process and, you know, going from, like you said, that poverty mindset and inferiority into a place of clarity and knowing who you are. How did you shift into that?
I think, like most people, I think your environment has a way of shaping you and shaping the way that you think. And if you haven't been around people who are really successful, then you kind of default back to what you're seeing. If you're not seeing successful Black men or women, or you see doctors or lawyers, or you see people in a higher status that look like you, then you're less likely to see yourself being able to accomplish that. So for me, it was just kind of a default back to, you know, being in public school, being around other kids who aren't doing a whole lot, you know, their parents not doing a whole lot. So even though coming from a two-parent home, there was just, you know, my stepdad worked in aircraft, but me and him really didn't have that, you know, that great of a relationship. And so I guess to answer your question, and it is a complex question, for me, it kind of began with figuring out that I was capable of more. And in order to do that, I had to put myself around people who actually saw themselves as more. And so I think when I was trying to think, I was like 20, maybe 21, a young man with kids. I didn't have my first kid till I was 21, but I was a single father. I was raising my daughters. I was working full time and putting myself through school, vo-tech, to gain a skill or a trade. And I'll come back to that because a lot of our young people, that's a big key. But I ran into a guy I was working with at a restaurant, and he says, hey, well, prior to that, let me back up. I had a prayer. I mean, that's one thing that was instilled in me is prayer. Mm-hmm. You don't know where to go, ask God for some direction. Right. And I asked God, I said, I feel like I'm lost. I feel like I don't know where I'm supposed to be. I don't have a lot of men in my life to kind of direct me. Lord, give me something that can help me, or put somebody in my life that helped me kind of where you want me to be. And, you know, I, you know, stumbled through this prayer. And then no sooner than a day or two later, I went into a guy I work with, kind of a nerdy dude, but he was really cool. And he just wasn't the type of guy that I would find myself hanging out with. Mm-hmm. But he was like, hey, you ever thought about owning your own business? I was like, yeah, that's interesting. So he was like, well, you know, why don't you come to this meeting? And I said, okay. And I got to thinking about it. I was like, you know what? Let me just see what he's talking about. And what he kind of exposed me to was what's known as network marketing.
Right.
And so I came and looked at this meeting, and I was kind of like, I don't know about these people, you know, they're a little, I don't know. Yeah. But I said, I saw something though, you know, they were all successful. They all talked differently and they all had something about them. So I said, let me just hang around this group for a little bit. And, you know, I kind of got involved with the network marketing, and what it was is I kind of bought into the system that they had, which was one, reading. So they had us reading a couple, you know, 15 to 30 minutes a day was where the kind of the requirement. You know, they have books, CDs, you know, and they encourage you to go to like a conference once a year. So they had kind of a system that kept you locked into positive thinking. Right. And what I kind of like to call success mindset now. And so in the process of reading consistently, listening to tapes, going to these conferences and meeting with these people who are doing something and going somewhere, my mindset began to change. And I went from reading 15, 30 minutes a day to reading an hour to reading 2 hours to at one point I was reading 3 to 5 books in a week. And my mindset changed. And when my mindset changed, everything outside of me changed. And I went from do-rags and baggy clothes to slacks and a, you know, polos. And they were like, what happened with you, man? What's going on? And wow. What I understood is how I grew my environment. And I started thinking a lot differently, talking a lot differently because I changed upstairs.
Wow, man. Respect, man. Respect. So, when you went through this development process, it sounds like that's where you got to really develop yourself and you found mentors and people to pour into you. You know, what kind of time, you know, because I don't think people really understand sometimes what it takes behind the scenes to become great at anything. And, you know, somebody may see, kind of going into your role as a therapist, somebody may see you and the assumption most people have, okay, this therapist is just asking me a bunch of questions, right? But the truth is, there's a lot of study, there's a lot of preparation, there's a lot of development to be able to do that. So what is the development that it takes to become a truly great therapist? What does one need to really study, prepare, and develop themselves to be able to do that?
Man, you have some heavy hitters. For me, it's not about becoming the best therapist. You know, I'm not trying to be the GOAT. I'm trying to be the best version of myself. Mm. For me, my finish line looks a lot different from somebody else, you know? Mm. And so for me, it's always about trying to be the best and striving to make sure that I'm improving daily.
Yeah.
And that I'm giving the clients the best version of myself, not just in my profession, but in life.
Right.
I want to give my wife, I want to give my kids the best version that I can while I'm here so that they can strive and push themselves to become better as well. Mm. I don't want to give them a subpar version of Terry. Mm. And then, you know, they go into the world and have to learn certain things. I want to be able to give them, you know, the wisdom of the struggles that it took me to get here. That makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. Wow. So even how you responded to that, right? Like, it shows that, you know, because I know, just being transparent, one thing that I deal with is not letting my whole identity be me, the entrepreneur, right? Right. Like, as entrepreneurs, yeah, sometimes it consumes a lot of your life and you tend to look through that lens through everything. And, you know, so what advice would you give to someone like me or someone listening that just even the way you answer that, right? Like, I'm not trying to be just the best therapist. I'm trying to be the best me, and mm-hmm, I want to be great at serving my family, taking care of myself and taking care of my clients. So how would you counsel a entrepreneur that thinks like that, right? This, their lens of life is just through their occupation or the work that they do.
There was a couple things that you stated that I want to touch on. And one of those things is therapy is just kind of helping you guide you through your life and through some of your mental health struggles. And for everybody, that looks a little bit different. Not everybody has significant trauma from their childhood that they have to work through. Some people are just lost and need some goals, and they need some direction, and they need to figure out what is it that's causing me to continue to fall over certain hurdles over and over again, you know?
Yeah.
And so if I was touching on that, I would first say this. You know, and it's interesting because I am working on a book talking about the box people. It's called, I want to call it the Say Goodbye to the Box People. And it talks about how people put each other in boxes and how if we're not careful, we also will put ourselves into a box. And what I mean by that is I'm a therapist, I'm an entrepreneur. And if I'm not careful, then everything that I will see will be through that lens. And I will never see myself being able to or capable of doing anything outside of that. So, for example, some people used to know me for working in a restaurant, being a server and having good communication. They remember me from that season of my life. So they didn't see me when I got certificates and I got degrees and then I got an associate's and a bachelor's and a master's. So they didn't see me. So if they ran into me now, they're not talking to me as Terry the therapist with the master's and all these certificates and awards. They're talking to me from the lens and experience that they knew me as. So to them, they're still talking to the server. They're still talking to Terry the server. And so what I mean is they put me in that specific box. Right. And so they will talk to me and deal with me as such. And if we're not careful, then we will still deal with ourselves in positions and places that we have not evolved. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
And so I would say, be open to the things that God has placed in you and understand that just because you don't see yourself in certain spaces doesn't mean that you can't be in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the conference where we met, I think is a great example of that. Yeah. You have all these millionaires, thousandaires walking around, and everybody's operating in different spaces in their lives. But I refuse to limit myself to one specific thing. You know, I'm a therapist at a conference where everybody's talking about becoming your own bank and becoming, you know, an author and all these real estate, all these different things. And I see myself operating it up and being in those spaces. And because I can see myself being in there, I'm going to put myself around people who operate in those spaces and grow that dream, grow that seed, you know. So
I love it. So speak to us about the transition, right? From becoming, you know, going into this therapy world, becoming a therapist. I'm like thinking about somebody that's listening that may be an aspiring. They're like, hey, I also have a similar gift like Terry. I love to encourage and I may want to go into this field. What drew you to this? Because I want to speak to two things, because one, there are not a lot of comparatively as many men, male therapists. And yeah. Then two, there are not as many black male therapists. So what drew you into this space and how did you get into it?
I would say you're absolutely right. I am basically a unicorn in this space. 80% of that, 80-85% of this industry is women. It's a women-dominated space. And out of that 15% are men. And even less than that is minorities, which is probably about 10%. Mm-hmm. And even out of that men, black men are less than 5% of that space. So you don't see a whole lot of us. I do have quite a few black therapist friends, but it's kind of like that thing when you get a red car, now all of a sudden you recognize all the red cars.
Yeah.
But there are some black therapists in certain spaces, and there are some really good black women therapists that are good. I guess you have to figure out where your comfort level is. Mm-hmm. I would recommend, if people are in certain spaces, that they go to Psychology Today. And there's filters on that allows you to kind of see who your preference is and narrow that as far as therapy. Maybe you have certain credentials that you're looking for, or maybe you have a certain gender, or if you prefer a black male therapist, it'll be able to narrow down those people who are in your area that are doing kind of what you would like to kind of happen. And then kind of you can read over their profiles and see what works for you. Is what I'm trying to say. So, but for me, yes, operating in this space as a black male therapist, I understand that I am a unique I have unique qualities, and I'm articulate enough to be able to speak on certain things that other people, other men are struggling with. So I don't take that for granted. I really feel like that is a blessing and a gift. So for me, being in this space and evolving in this space was not something that just happened overnight. My ultimate goal was helping people. So helping people, you can feel that in any space. You know what I'm saying? As long as your heart, as long as you have a heart to help people, you have to figure out what your gift is, figure out what you're good at. And sometimes you have to look back in your life and see what areas or what was I doing when I had the most fun or I really enjoyed. And for me, that was helping people. You know, I've mentored, I've taught, I've volunteered my time to help out youth and just do things in my city. And those were some of the most fulfilling times for me, is just being around and being able to encourage. And then seeing those young people grow up, and then they find me in the grocery store and be like, hey, you remember me? And I'm looking up at them. I'm 6'1", so I'm pretty tall. But some of these kids are as tall as me now. You're like, hey, you remember me? And I'm like, I don't even know why. I don't even know who you are, dude. Yeah. Like, you worked with me in a program and you said this, you encouraged me with this. And I took that information and applied it to my life, and I have success here, or I did this, or this, what you did in that period of time allowed me to become successful. And those are really humbling things that I can look back on my life and say, that's what I kind of navigated towards.
Yeah.
But when I was in certain spaces, it was kind of like, well, what are you doing? You know, I worked with therapists, and, you know, I worked with an LMFT or someone that was in social work. And I was just asking, like, what are you doing? Do you enjoy what you're doing? Mm-hmm. And through that, I was able to kind of figure out, like, you know what? Social work allows me to go and travel and do whatever I want to do. If I wanted to work in a clinic, I could. If I wanted to work in a hospital, I could. If I wanted to work in a school, I could. Or if I just wanted to go into private practice. Like, it had way more things and opportunities to allow me to do what I wanted to do.
Wow. Respect. That's what's up. So when it comes to, I'm just going to put it out there, men, period, and then black men, secondarily, there's a stigmatism of, like, I don't want to get a therapist. Like, it's, I think it's, again, from the outside view, and you can speak better to this, it seems like therapy is becoming more and more popular than it's ever been, which is great. but there's still stigmatism, like, oh man, therapy's for the birds. I'm a man. I don't need to. But more and more, I see mentors of mine, friends of mine, family members of mine. Like, yeah, I've talked to my therapist. Like, you're hearing people say, like, it's becoming a regular thing. So what is your thought on that whole discussion of, you know, men and black men, especially dealing with and utilizing services and therapy?
Black men and the stigma that's surrounding mental health has always been there. And for us, you know, in our ethnicity, for black people, you know, if we look at mental health, if we look at health in general, as well as mental health, I mean, there's the history in America has not been kind to us at all. And so if you were just looking back on that, you would say, nah, I probably don't want to deal with mental health. You know, you think of the syphilis project, you know, there's all different types of things in history where black folks were used as guinea pigs for mental health progress. And so when you look at those type of things, and it probably would make you want to move in that direction. But I think there's been significant progress in the mental health field. And I think some of the stigma for mental health has been being reinforced by us. Some of us are actually reinforcing the stigma of mental health. For men, you know, we're always taught to be tough.
Yes.
And the reality is, a lot of us don't really have places where we can talk about the things that hurt us. You know, we're just taught to tough it up, you know, do a push-up, quit being soft, you know. And in the process of that, we have internalized a lot of the hard places and hard things that we go through in life. And the problem with that is when you stuff things long enough, it still comes out.
That's right.
But it comes out in your health. It comes out as anger. It comes out as a breakdown in your life. You know, some of us are fortunate enough to have support systems that help us kind of navigate these tough areas of our lives. But for some of us that don't have that, you know, we will crack under the pressure of hardship, you know, racial oppression, you know, some of the systems that have been put in place that really have caused us some difficulties, you know. Mm-hmm. And we will crack underneath that when we don't have places and safe places to kind of talk and process the things that we're going through in our lives. So stigma is a big part of what's going on, even with the pandemic being what it is. It exacerbated the mental health, unaddressed mental health in not just America that you're seeing, but also in our Black community. And with men, the suicide rate is off the charts. And wow. I think you touched on something I think is interesting that I do want to deal with, is that, yeah, mental health is trendy right now. It's exciting because we have all these shows that are talking about mental health, and you have all your favorite actors that are engaging in conversations about mental health and encouraging, and we need that. But what happens when it's no longer sexy and it's no longer trendy? What have you gained from that, you know? And I want to create a space where we can have conversations about Black mental health in general, but specifically something that affects our communities and us as Black men. So I got to put a plug in for the group that I'm working with.
Yeah.
Called the Black Men's Locker. So it's me and three other brothers from the Wichita, Kansas area that have come together, and we created a platform for Black men, safe space for Black men to be able to come in and gain advice, mental health, talk about mental health, talk about financial situations, and just a place where you can come and get not just advice, but also some type of support. And so we also have a podcast that we do once a month, and we're getting ready to kind of expand and do a little bit more. Yeah. But we touch on topics like mental health. We have a really good episode coming up where we talk about past trauma. Mm. And we speak from the Black man's perspective. And this doesn't negate what other people and ethnicities are dealing with. But this is just a kind of a conversation and a look at what Black men are dealing with. Right. In our homes, in our internal struggles that we're dealing with that we don't get to talk about.
True. True tough. Wow, man. That's phenomenal. Kudos to you for doing that. And we'll definitely plug that link in so those that can be a part get connected. So
we're definitely going to put that in. We online, one of the biggest ones platforms we have it on different platforms, but on Facebook, we started off with just 500 members. We're nearing and close to almost 12,000 members now.
That's incredible.
So you have something to say.
Yeah, you're not just talking about it, man. You're doing it. You're doing the work to change those stigmatisms and help a lot of these brothers heal. So what would you say is the Black man's struggle from in mental health? I mean, this is overall, but like, what do you think is the main struggle there? And what do you think is the solution?
Say that again.
What do you think the main struggle, if you had to lump all Black men together, the most common struggle when it comes to mental health, and what do you think is the solution?
That's a heavy question, brother.
Sure.
I would say that, first of all, I'm careful. I'm pretty careful of not trying to lump everybody into groups, because that's the same thing that they do by Black folks. They lump us all in groups. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful of not to lump people into groups, because, first of all, it strips them of their individual struggle and the things that are unique for them. We're all dealing with something different. Right. And although we might share some common difficulties, my my version of what oppression looks like may look like a whole nother different version for you. You know, and then we deal with some things within our ethnicity. You know, if you talk about colorism, you know, even I have to understand and acknowledge that in certain spaces, as a light-skinned man, I have less resistance than if you walk into that same space as a dark-skinned man.
True.
So your lived experience is a whole lot different from mine. And so I try to stay away from group, trying to group people in things. But I do understand that there are some systems in place that we deal with as Black people that were put in place to make us oppressed. And if we don't come out of certain spaces and evolve our mindsets and tie ourselves into what God has for us, then we will find ourselves continuing to stay in that space. So if, to answer your question, to go back to that and answer your question, it's different for everybody. It's different for everybody. For us as Black people, I think there's we have to come together. And we have to stop glorifying images of ourselves that is trash. Because these little girls and these little boys are looking up to us. And, you know, there's a sad video that I saw with, I think the kids were in kindergarten. They were really young and they were all singing Hands on the Knees, Hands on the Knees. And that was really sad to kind of see. That these kids have picked up that type of nonsense and are regurgitating it, you know? And so I think the biggest thing that we have to do as a group is, first of all, start to police each other. Have to start policing certain spaces. And I say that with respect to, as we grow, we lift each other up and not talking down to each other. But helping elevate ourselves, and in return, we elevate ourselves as a culture. And so that's what we need to be doing. And in the process of that, the things that we have as individuals, we can bond to each other and help support each other and lift each other up.
Respect.
There's healing in that.
I believe that. I believe that, man. So when you think about, because sometimes people, speaking of lumping things, sometimes people lump these three things together, but they're, what I'm learning is that they're different. Therapy, counseling, and coaching, right? Right? Because some people say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm getting some therapy, but they're really getting coaching. Or they're getting coaching and they're really getting counseling. So what is the difference between the three? And if you could articulate on that.
I don't know if I'm an expert enough to be able to dive into the very specific differences of the groups. I would say this, the people who are engaged in any of these are trying to find some level of self-improvement, right? And so I think that looks different for everybody. Some people shy away from therapy because maybe they had a bad therapy experience and they're finding what they need in coaching. So you said therapy, coaching, and what was the third one?
Counseling.
Counseling. Okay. So counseling and therapy could be considered the same type of feel. But I think, again, going back to what I said originally, I think anybody that is engaging in any of these three are trying to articulate what they want for their future and what they want that to look like. And for everybody, that looks a little bit different. And so if they're going through coaching in order to improve some social skills and some of those type of things, I think that's great for them. I would not talk down on any of those. But I would say that if you have things that are stopping you, so let me talk to trauma. So trauma looks different for everybody.
Right.
What is traumatic for me may not be traumatic for you. And so that looks different for everybody. But I would encourage my brothers and sisters and people in general to really kind of look at the areas of their life that caused them to stop, that caused them to be dysregulated, that caused them to not be the best version of themselves. And what I mean by that is, if every time somebody talks to me about what happened to me in my childhood, or let me use a better example, if somebody doesn't keep their word and I am become very dysregulated, I want to argue and I fight, then that's something I might want to look at. If every time somebody pokes that area of my life, my reaction is aggressive and violent, then that's something that we have to take a look at. Is there something that I have to kind of dig below the surface and get a better understanding of why I respond like this? And I think therapy and coaching does I don't know about coaching. I know coaching has various different things in it, but therapy and counseling does a really good job, depending on the person that you're dealing with and the credentials that they have, will depend on what their method is to kind of deal with whatever symptomatic stuff that you have that you said that you're dealing with. So like I said, I don't think I'm an expert enough to be able to dissect each one of those and justfully, but I would just say that all of them have a common denominator, and that everyone that kind of seeks those are trying to fix the area of their life that's either dysfunctional, that they want improvement on, or something that they have just noticed that is probably a hindrance to them and their success. So
for sure, respect, man. So what would you say to encourage those, if whether you encourage it or don't, I kind of know your probably philosophy on this, but what would you say to those that feel like, I'm good, I don't need a therapist, you know, like life is good. Like what, you know, people often feel like therapy is only for like, hey, things are really bad, I need therapy, or things are, I want to fix this area of my life. What would you say? Are you under the philosophy that everybody should have a therapist, or you say, hey, you don't need it? You know, I want to know your philosophy on that. What's your take on that?
Well, there's a lot of different areas of that I want to touch without being lost and going down too many rabbit holes. First of all, I hear the I'm good, I don't need a therapist a lot from men. Some of that is rooted in that stigma, and some of that's rooted in that toughness that I don't want to appear weak to others. And sometimes it's the groups that we're in that we surround ourselves with, that when we tell them that we're seeking a therapist or we're in therapy, they're like, oh man, you don't need none of that, you know, and they reinforce the stigma part of that. The second part of that is, again, people saying, I'm good. Are you really? Are you really good? Or are you just saying that? Because one of the keys to success for therapy or counseling or anything is a teachability and the willingness to kind of go into it and want to be better. I can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. And if you come into therapy with the mindset of, I want to work on the stuff that I want to work on until it hurts, then you're not going to go very far. We can talk about surface level stuff all the time. But what happens when we have to talk about your childhood? What happens when we have to deal with those type of things that make you really uncomfortable? Are you willing to do that, or are you going to make an excuse of what that looks like? So teachability is a big part of that. As far as the theory, I don't know if there's a specific type of theory for that. I would just say this, you know, that what I was saying with the teachability and accountability is so heavy, because if you're not accountable to yourself, you can't be accountable to me. No, you're not going to be accountable to your wife. You're not going to be accountable to your kids. If everything is always somebody else's fault for why it happened to you, then you really give the power away. So success in counseling and therapy is first you accepting that something happened. You accept your role in it. I'm not asking you to be the victim, and I'm asking you to get rid of the victim mindset.
Yeah.
Because the problem is, as long as I'm a victim, and let me go back a little bit, because victimhood, some people actually get power from that. Pity, being in that space.
Yeah.
Can be empowering for some people.
For sure.
And you will have a hard time trying to pull them out of that space if they don't want to be in that space. So accountability, saying, hey, there's some things in place. You know, maybe I have my last five relationships have been dysfunctional.
Yeah.
But I can't call the women in my life crazy and me be the common denominator.
Right.
There has to be some accountability and some discipline going forward that's going to allow you to be successful in any endeavor, coaching, therapy, any of those, counseling, what have you.
Respect, brother. Respect. So I know you have a new practice that you're launching here in the Wichita, Kansas area. So if you could speak to your new practice, I know this show is going to go around the nation, but I know there's ways people can maybe either connect with your group online, but also tell us about your practice for those that might hear this, they're locally.
So my practice is called Odyssey Counseling and Consulting, LLC. And you will have some links and some other things. And although I am locally based, I am working on trying to get some information out there and get information specifically to my minority friends. And so I think I do that through a different lens. Sometimes I do that through the Black Men's Locker. And that's not just for Black people. That's for anybody that has Black friends. You know, whether you're white, Asian, whatever your ethnicity, if you have Black friends that you wish well, that you want them to get their mental health together and you want to see them be the best version of themselves, then you should be sharing what we're doing. You should be sharing the resources and things that you know that's going to help them become the best version of themselves. Going back to my practice, Odyssey Counseling and Consulting, we are in the Wichita area. So currently I'm just licensed within Kansas, currently, but I'm working on expanding that to other places as well. And then also putting some things in spaces that allow people to get some type of information online. You can, on Facebook, you can find me on Terry Talks. I always put a lot of motivational stuff on there, some quotes, and sometimes have conversations with people or try to have some type of engagement. I'm doing a little bit better on trying to engage my audience. And so, but sometimes I put just personal stories about sometimes just coming across people and the gift that I have, touching them and just kind of some stuff that kind of happens from that. So, Odyssey Counseling Consulting online, you can find me at Odyssey C, like cat, andc.com. And awesome. That is, that's a shorter version of my practice, which is Odyssey Counseling and Consulting. The consulting part of that is something that's going to be in the future.
Yeah.
But great things are going to be happening because I'm allowing God to use the gifts that he's placed in me. And I'm creating a platform and it's awesome to see some of the things that he's doing. I've won a lot of awards and certificates and stuff. And all that means nothing if I can't put that stuff into practice and have a heart for people and the change.
Yeah.
And so they can find me on Odyssey Counseling Consulting. So odysseycnc.com. Another one I had was Odyssey Counseling and Consulting as one.com. That'll redirect you to my site. And from there at the bottom, you can see kind of what I have going on with Simple Practices, the electronic health record that I use. You can see my profile on that and you can schedule some time.
Beautiful. I love it, man. One final question before we go that I always ask all people that come on the show, and you weren't prepped for this. What is the difference between one's gift and one's purpose? One's gift and one's purpose.
Ooh. Okay. What? I really wasn't prepped on anything that you've asked me. Let me back up. So to answer your question, what is the difference between a person's gift and their
purpose?
I would say that they go hand in hand, because I think the gift that God's placed in you, some people spend their entire life trying to figure out what their gift is. And for me, my gift of encouragement was something I had to look back and see, what was I really good at? Where did I really excel at? And for me, it was always encouraging people and helping people come out of dark places. And so I think that ties into what my purpose is, because why would God give me a gift that I can't use, you know? And I think a lot of us have to spend that time and be alone, which I think is scary for some people, because isolation is really where you grow, you know? Put something up today where it's talking about how butterflies' wings grow in isolation. And I was just basically saying everything in your life has a season. And I think you have to be patient enough to understand that with those seasons comes a winter too. Wow. Isolation, sometimes a cold place where you have to go and you have to marinate on what God has placed in you and even the struggles. And that's a hard thing to do sometimes, because sometimes the hardest things in our life prepare us for the greatest victories. They prepare us to be able to stand on the platforms and hold the trophies, hold the rewards, hold the awards in a place, because it's allowed our character to be challenged. When I was going through my master's, both my wife and my son ended up in the hospital and almost died. My son was in ICU for almost 3 weeks, heart failure, kidney failure, had a stroke. And I had to really have my faith tested and stretched. And despite everything, I was still telling those doctors, I believe God. And despite all the things that they rattled off, I said, that's not what God has for my son. That's not, you know, they were saying he was going to be on medicine for the rest of his life. A couple months ago. Yeah, I think it was last year. Came off all medicines. 100% was able to have contact. In fact, the doctor said, if we didn't work on this kid specifically, we probably would not even recognize him.
Wow.
So when you start talking, man, you get me excited, man. But I hope I didn't go off too far. I'm going to circle back to answer your question. The gifts that you have cannot be discovered by man. You have to go to God. And be in unison with what he has for you to find those and discover those things. And I think you can, there's different assessments and stuff that you can start looking at to help you kind of figure out what you're good at and what your gift is. But I think it aligns with everything that you have in your future. Yeah. If you take the time to understand that the space that you're in doesn't look like where you're going.
Wow. Brother, that's so beautifully said. I love that about what you said about isolation. We're going to, man, wonderfully said. We're going to plug all of the resources so people can connect with you, brother. Really, really appreciate you. I know this is going to be an episode people are going to listen to, comment about, talk about, spread and share. Thank you so much for pouring into the people and into myself. Bless you, brother. Thank you so much.
Let me just say something real quick, because I appreciate you, brother. And since we met at that conference, I don't believe things happen by accident. I believe that God allows you to cross paths with people at certain points in your life. And it's up to you whether you're going to nourish that relationship or if you're going to do anything with that. So I thank God for you and just the opportunity to be able to come on here and share a little bit of my life. My story is pretty unique, and I'm working on articulating that better for the public and get into certain spaces. But I wanted to definitely thank you, David, for what you're doing. And I've watched your episodes and they're great material. You ask great questions. And so your audience is lucky to have you.
Thank you, brother. That means a lot. I appreciate that, family. Wonderful, brother. Well, we'll definitely have to do it again, man, and make it happen. Absolutely. All right. Blessings, bro. Thank you.
I searched all over the world, struggling to find it.
Dear listener, I would like to thank you so much for listening to How I Discovered My Gift with yours truly, David D. Simons. As a token of my appreciation, I would love to give to you my most important piece of work to date, and it's called the Purpose Gift Tape. It's a motivational mixtape geared towards helping you to identify your gifts, which ultimately lead to you discovering your purpose. This is a 6-track album, a
poured my heart and soul into. It includes beautiful beats and amazing spoken word over it. And I'd love to give that to you as a free gift, as a token of my appreciation for being a part of the community. So to get your copy, all you need to do is go to podcast.daviddsimons.com. That's podcast.david, the middle initial D, Simons, Simons.com, and get yours today. Thank you for being a listener. I'll catch you on the next episode. How I Discovered My Gift with David D. Simons is proud to be of the amazing and illustrious Alive Podcast Network.